Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Greetings, everyone. Dr. Jeff here in Adventures in Truth Podcast with my esteemed colleague, Jim Case. How are you today, Jim?
Hi, Jeff. I'm good, thank you. Good to see you. Good to be here on another exciting adventure, getting ready to dive in, although we're not entirely sure what that looks like yet.
Isn't that fun? That's where we got a starting line, but we have no idea where this is going to go.
Exactly.
So I thought that we might talk a little bit about why we're here, reaching back to maybe our first few podcasts without getting into the theology and the philosophy of it all. If in a simple summary, we could say that our lives come down to what have we learned, what are we learning, what will we learn? So it's about learning, and we learn through our experiences. We learn, it seems, much better through our own experiences than we do in observing others' experiences. And, you know, there's many age-old colloquialisms and sayings about, you know, do as I say, not what I do, and all the like. Or you could watch, you know, people injure themselves, but then, you know, we go out and do the same thing until we get injured. And one day we say, oh, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. Just, it hurts too much emotionally, relationally, physically. But if life really is about, if our incarnation on this planet is really about the lessons that we're learning, and we do learn, we do change. It might be slow. It could be a decade in the making before a genuine, true character shift takes place. And in some cases, people don't. But if that's what we're here to do, is to learn, and what would we really be wanting to learn? If the primary issue is about learning love, and we try to define what love is, it would come down to acceptance, connection, bonding, unity, oneness, allness, an idea of collaboration, an idea of playing as a team, and not our team against your team, or our team against another team, but literally we're all on the planet on this big rock being hurled through space, going God only knows where. but we are really a team. We don't act much like a team. Well, I know I'm going on a good rant here right now. Still talking about what are we here to do? What is our primary purpose? And if it is to learn, then we'd have to say, what is it that we're learning? So I'm number one here to learn. What is it I'm here to learn? How to love myself, how to love others, how to accept, how to be open, knowing that we really are here having quite a wide range of different experiences. And then once we have this learning that we've done, then we start teaching through our examples. Our lives are being observed by others, both in the physical and perhaps in the non-physical or the metaphysical. But we're teaching, whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not, our lives demonstrate the teaching through what our experiences have yielded, our examples. An example is an aspect of what one has learned or not in how they're living their life. So I went on for quite a long time just in the intro there, Jim. Did that spark any comment, feedback, or critique?
Are you sitting down? No.
I think I am.
So we may have had some of this conversation before. I find myself desiring to kind of push back on your premise. And not as a way of devolving the topic, but more to kind of figure out where we are, how we are looking at this. Are we looking in the same direction? Are we looking in opposite directions? So the beginning point is I don't see that we're here to learn. That's quantifiable. And it's also, to me, is it keeps things in the same kind of vein that there are, and we talked about this a little bit, that there's right ways and wrong ways, there's winners and losers, there's the learning thing to me is also very linear. It's very mental. It doesn't encompass. For me, it's about we're here to experience. And those experiences then inform our choices and our ideas and our thoughts and our emotions and how we choose to move forward in our personal evolution through those experiences. And those experiences then, once integrated, become the action of our lives or the way we move forward, and that becomes the example. Because I have experienced this thing, and through this thing, I have come out, I've come through and to a new place, a new, because it isn't always the case that experience leads to, no, that's not true, actually, now that I'm saying that. Experience always leads to evolution. It just depends on how you interpret or how you dive into that integration that will decide which paths you choose to walk from that particular experience. So for example, since we just recently have been talking about death, just as a short example is, so the experience of death, meaning the people who are observing the process of death in another human being, not that I'm going through the process of death, but there are as many different experiences of that as there are people, meaning how I approach it because of what I have experienced in my life is vastly different than how someone, very even my brothers, approach it because their experience is very different than my experience and my life experiences are very different. So we have a very different entry point. And then once in the experience, it's a question of perspective and how do we manage our perspective within that event? Again, all driven on all the things we've talked about before. What is the subconscious process? What is the unconscious process? What is the conscious process? So first and foremost, that for me is a little, in concept, is a little challenging and feels a little limiting. And I'm not unwilling to have that be the conversation. I want to make sure that when I'm talking from my perspective, that I'm not trying to change your viewpoint. I'm just trying to come at it from my understanding versus where you're coming from and your understanding.
having heard both my own and yours, I would say we're on exactly the same page. Okay. I heard no difference from what I said and what you said. And I even used, we learn through our experiences. If you back this all up and listen to it again, you'll hear that I did. In fact,
oh, you did. You did. You did use those words. Yes.
I'm not sure. I think we're on the same page.
I guess the starting premise was we're here to learn. And I just did categorically disagree with that. We're here to experience. If we learn something from it, that's great. And we'll always grow from it in one direction or another. So I guess I don't know why that kind of sits funny for me, but.
Okay. Well, let's keep going and see where we wind up how that sits for you. Whether we like it or not, watching other people, how they live their lives is also part of the learning, part of the experiencing, both in things we want to emulate and things that we would say, I will never do. Mm-hmm. I always crack up when people come in and sit on my couch and they bemoan how they've become their parent. And they swore that they would never allow that to happen. But yet, wow, there it is. You know, there's even TV commercials on, I think Geico has a commercial about not becoming your parent or something like that. But, you know, it's enough of a thing that a wealthy business like that, you know, made a spoof commercial about it.
Well, isn't it? I find that fascinating, because how could you become anything else if you have not made conscious choices to do something different, or not even to do something different, but to what we speak about all the time, which is, in order to understand who you are now, you have to understand where, what you became from. That makes sense?
Yep.
Yeah. So, the only experience that we have of how to model are the two people we call parents, or the one person we call parent, depending on your situation. So it's only natural that there's a part of you that's going to evolve to that, to some of that. If you do nothing between the beginning and now, you'll absolutely evolve into that, unless somehow you've created life circumstances that force you to have experiences that have you question the very basis of those ideas and thoughts and beliefs of the person that you end up becoming.
Yeah. There must be something truly, truly deep and profound at work. Because when you were saying, unless you consciously, you know, if you don't consciously choose to not become your parents, you're going to. What I'm talking about is people who have consciously said, I will not emulate these same behaviors and personality traits and whatnot, yet they still get there in their political views, in their religious views, in their diet, their exercise, where they live, all that sort of thing. It's,
oh yeah,
it's interesting how close to perhaps the same end game people will get to, regardless of whether they choose to emulate it or not. It still seems to be quite a powerful force, that the end state is close to the same. I guess that's where we get the acorn didn't fall far from the tree, or
right,
something.
Not different. That's right. Well, and you know, it's interesting. You know, the recent experience with my dad's passing. One of the things that we all the boys laugh about, but something that I was particularly aware of, is if I get to a place of if I'm a little too stressed, or I'm not paying attention to my vibration consistently, my mother shows up. And what I mean by that is, and it's a joke, because we lovingly call her Char, because her name's Charlene. and I'll find myself, I found myself when we were all together in Pennsylvania, where I would start doing my mom just like that, you know, and especially it gets intense when I'm in her energy for any length of time. There'll be these points where I have to stop and go, dude, stop being your mother. You know, this is not your gig. You know, and I have to, and it takes a bit to disconnect from that and to find a calmer, cleaner space that's not about in being in that reactive space that I equate with her. It's mine. I mean, it's my personality trait, but it's so noticeably not me, if that makes sense. There's a point where it actually, I literally feel like I'm being my mother for a minute. And people outside of me have the same experience. And the joke is, you know, okay, can I talk to Jim now? You know, or you know, can we put Char away? And it's not something that typically goes on a long time, but it's definitely there. And even, you know, as much as I've done work on myself and the things that I've worked through and processed, it still shows up. It still shows up regardless, but I have to be aware of it, because sometimes it's not very positive. It's the more critical aspect of my personality. And we liken it to my mom because that's kind of her personality. You know, she's very loving and very supportive, but she's very critical of everyone and everything, about everyone and about everything. And, you know, if it doesn't fit into her idea, she's gotten a lot better that she doesn't shut down around it or do anything awful. And she never did, but she's not quiet about it. She has her viewpoint and she shares her viewpoint, and it isn't always welcomed and it isn't always nice. But, and when I find myself in that energy, I have to stop and say, time out, dude, because it doesn't feel good to me either. But it comes out pretty automatically in certain circumstances, particularly around the need to control things. But I just thought an interesting example because it doesn't ever seem to go away.
Uh-huh. So let's go back to what I think we're trying to shape right now is the idea of learning, and we learn through experience. But what I'm hearing you say is you're okay with the experience just being for the experience without the necessity to learn from it, and that's what we come to the planet to do, is to have all these different experiences.
Yeah, and maybe I'm making too much of the learn word. You know, as you were talking, it's like, yeah, that's right. It's about experience, and then it's the integration of that experience which creates understanding. And then that understanding then can become wisdom if it's depending on how it's used, or depending on how it's not used, or if it becomes fully integrated as a part of my expression. So I was quickly trying to see if there was a reason why learning was an issue. Because I get it. Yeah, that's kind of what we're doing. And I guess part of that is because I very much ascribe to the idea that words don't teach. I like that concept. I like that idea a lot. Words can give you framework. Words can give you a linear kind of clarification or description. But I don't think words provide anything that helps us to learn. I think experience is where we do that.
For sure.
Where we integrate or don't integrate the whole thing instead of the idea or the concept.
You may recall in a previous podcast, I might have shared a study that UCLA did back in 1972 regarding what percent of communication words constitute. And it was an alarming, whopping 7%.
Wait, say that again. The amount of
communication in the category of what constitutes communication, both with verbal and nonverbal. Mm-hmm. Verbal with regard to words only accounted for 7% of the communication. The rest of it is nonverbal. 93% is pitch, tone, inflection, eye contact, body language, all of that other stuff.
Yeah.
So learning to me isn't even so much about communication, because you could have a person on a deserted island that would learn through their experiences of hunger how to gather coconuts and crabs and whatever else they would sustain themselves on, fresh water, all that's learning, and they may have never uttered a word the entire time. And if we could go from there to where that one person now discovers that on the other side of the island there's another person, now they have a conundrum of, are there enough resources here to support both of us? And if you're a different skin color, do you scare me? And am I going to plot against you your demise so that I don't have to be afraid and will be able to have all these resources for myself? You know, that's kind of the idea of, are we going to, through all this learning that we're doing, are we going to develop a modality of teamwork, collaboration, cooperation, and unity? Or are we going to continue to learn and behave that there are limited resources and I've got to get as many as I can to sustain myself and my family? And that takes us to an energy of competition. And those are really the two most simple ways of looking at all of this: collaboration or competition. One is ego-driven, the other one is spirit-driven. And we come to the planet realizing that. As a two-year-old, you want all the bubble gum in the store. You don't care if your brother or sister wants one. You want all the bubble gum in the store, and you would take it all if you could as a two-year-old.
mine.
Yes. And, you know, by the time you're seven, you realize that it doesn't feel good that your little brother or sister's crying because you have all the gum. And so you learn to share. Or your mom or dad physically does something to you to make it painful for you to have it all. So you unwillingly share, but you learn that life is better if you share a little bit.
So that brings a curious question. Learning versus experience. I was looking up learning just to see if there was anything interesting in the definition, because we like to do that, you know. And it's pretty straightforward. The acquisition of knowledge or skills through experience, study, or by being taught. So pretty much what it is. But so I was curious, it was when you were, sorry, you were just talking about, what were you just talking about?
Primarily the ego, which is operating in competition, versus spirit, which works in collaboration.
Yes. So we're talking about kids, and it actually sparks my curiosity to wonder if that whole premise is not purely driven on the environment in which they were born into. Meaning, if a child is brought into a mother and father situation, and the parents themselves are fairly evolved in the sense that they have a good sense of themselves, and they understand that idea that you're talking about of the competition versus collaboration on a larger scale, you know, so that their lives are more about collaborative effort than it is about competitive effort. And so even within the context of their relationship, there is a lot of collaboration. That foundation is what actually sets the stage for how that kid is going to experience either of those concepts. And so they're living out what they're experiencing, which is in some form, way or another, the one who needs to hoard all the bubblegum balls is experiencing something in the dynamic of the home life. One of the parents has that energy, and it's the energy they're focused on for whatever reason. Maybe their attachment is to this particular person as opposed to that particular person. But I've seen it happen where there are some kids who you could literally beat them every day and you couldn't beat the selfish out of them. And there are some kids that just need gentle reminder because they're experiencing other children who are in an environment that is very selfishly motivated. And so they're kind of confused in the socialization process, because this one over here screams and yells and throws a fit and continues to scream and yells and throws a fit until they get what they want. But this individual, but the more balanced parents recognize that and then can provide some more context to the situation for the young child so that they can release that I'm not getting it right because I should be doing it that way. And the parents saying, yeah, no, that's really not how we do things. That's not how they need to be done. So it just sparked that whole idea of that, that isn't a self-contained or a self, what's the word I want? It's inherited. It's what, in that absorption process in the very early years, they don't miss a beat, those kids. They don't miss a beat. You know, they take it all in, and then the predominant energies win, typically.
Well, sure. And some of that, I totally agree with you, is shaped at home. And again, that's kind of like what I talked about in the beginning of our podcast today. Through the demonstration of parents, what they're modeling is what the kids are picking up. In terms of, are they philanthropic? Do they give? Are they part of some kind of a charitable organization? Do they volunteer their time or not?
Yeah.
Do they share their own food? Do they have a candy bar and break it in three pieces so mom can have one and kids can have them? I think moms sometimes do a better job of that than dads. But I was also reminded while you were talking that in different countries, and I can't quote chapter and verse on which country and what time period, but I I'm thinking back to some class I took, an anthropological class, where there was an anthropologist who was eating an apple in front of a group of African children, and the kids were looking at him, and he didn't know that they were thinking, what a selfish SOB that you reached into your backpack and pulled out an apple and you're eating this in front of us. And so I guess he kind of clued into the, I'm doing something like a social faux pas right now. Mm-hmm. So he held up another apple that he had in his backpack, and he said, whichever of you children can run over here the quickest, you can have this apple. And none of them ran over to take the apple. And he's like, I don't get it. You know, back home where I come from,
American.
There would have been a mob. Somebody would have pushed somebody out of the way. Somebody would have tripped somebody, you know, to try to get over here and get the apple.
Yeah.
And, you know, during his stay, it was explained to him that the kids recognized that there wasn't enough for everybody. So they didn't want to do what he was doing, which was eating in front of the rest of them, because someone would feel bad. You know, so wouldn't that be cool if we could all love and live that way? It would be interesting to see in that particular tribe or clan or whatever they were, what would promote a level of fear in them that they would steal, kill, take from another human being or another group? Do they war at all? Do they raid at all? It'd be interesting to kind of know if that's what they're teaching their children. If there's not enough for everybody, then we don't want it. Is that across the board with them? Or anyway, it'd be interesting to know, because that's a pretty cool philosophy if we could promote and teach that.
Yep. Well, and it could be that some of that is driven off of the economic status of it within the circumstance of that culture. So because there wasn't much to begin with, what does come comes for all and not for one.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, those kids had to have had an experience of that, and their culture continues to reflect it to some level. Because I mean, I'm not the authority on it, but I know I've seen. A ton of stories and documentaries and movies that talk about that very thing, and how, yeah, there's still some people within that culture that have a different experience. Some think that's the only way to get out of what they perceive to be a negative experience, while others don't perceive it as negative at all, as it is just what it is. It reminds me of, I think I told you this story before, but I was, for the longest time, flummoxed by why people continue to live in places like Wisconsin and Missouri and Chicago and Illinois and particularly with regard to the 6 months of winter that they get every year. And it was specific to that, because it was one of those things that I'm just like, every winter, and this is particularly when I was living in California, it was like every winter was the same. Why do you people go through this nonsense every single winter? This just makes no sense to me. Like, it just seems like a miserable experience. And why do you continue to do that? And all of these people still live there. You know, there's a lot of people that live in that area of the country. And I was driving a guy to the airport one day who lived deep into the heart of that. He was like 2 hours north of the airport in a remote part, or maybe not a remote part, but the northern part of Wisconsin. So for him, you know, he lived out, I guess, on a farm or whatever, but that was the way of life. That was, you know, the winter was, it snowed in end of September and you didn't dig out until April or June or whenever it happened. And I said, I finally got the courage up to ask him point blank. I'm like, so here's my thing. This is my perception. Why do you stay there? And I don't mean that, I don't mean to sound like an asshole, but I don't get it. And he sort of looked at me and went, like he didn't understand the question. And then he said, I've lived there my whole life. It's what I know. I don't see it as good or bad. It's just what is. Mm-hmm. It's what I've experienced and it's what I know. And And it was like all of a sudden, like a bazillion light bulbs went off in my head. Like, oh my God, it was that easy and that simple an answer. It wasn't, it's not anything complicated or convoluted. It's just, that's my experience. I grew up there. That's what I know. It's not a, it doesn't look bad to me. It doesn't feel bad to me. It's just, this is how we live, you know? And so tying that to, you know, your story with the kids and stuff, I think it's, there's a subjectiveness. Sometimes we look at that and say, well, how could you be happy? How could you be, how could there be collaboration in that environment when you're all poor? You know, like that right. doesn't make sense. Why aren't you killing each other to get out of there? Why aren't you fighting with each other and shooting each other and killing each other to get the hell out of there? Because
yeah, well, they don't know they're poor. Just like the guy from Wisconsin didn't know that that was harsh, and it's just
they don't know they're poor, and they don't have a judgment about it. They just, it is what it is, and what's true in that environment is we accomplish a whole lot more together than we can individually.
Right. I'm just laughing at the statement I made that it came out of my mouth so easily. They don't know that they're poor, and. Yeah. What's really funny is, what if they're not the ones that are poor, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it's sort of that whole idea of the fish, a fish is not, what is that expression? The fish doesn't know it's in water. Isn't that what that expression, what is it that the fish are not aware? No. Something similar to that, that their environment is their environment. They don't see it as anything different or separate. It's just part of the experience.
If we backtrack for a moment to the example you were talking about earlier of kids at home, like in the American model of we were talking about selfishness and over time learning selflessness and team and collaboration and all that. And I haven't watched children's cartoons in quite a long time, but I do remember some of the ones I watched as a kid, and I certainly remember 25 years ago when my kids were young, watching some of the same cartoons were still on, and then there were some new ones. But a lot of what concerns me today is all of the video games that young boys are playing, and even in some cases, girls are, they can converse about them. They're aware of them because it allows them to be conversant with the boys about the games they're playing. But most of the games today are very violent, mm-hmm. and involve some kind of first person shooter, or there's some war involved. There's death, destruction, violence. And it just, it's like, it is absolutely pandemic.
Yeah.
Because it isn't just in America. These games are going worldwide, and it's a social thing. There are some of these games that are just as popular as Facebook or Twitter or some of the other Instagram social medias, that this is how kids are communicating with each other. They're not using the social medias because they're doing it through their portals or the apps within these games.
Yep.
And they haven't been out there long enough yet that we can see the long-term consequences of these things. But it's, to the best of my knowledge, other than maybe some kind of collective consciousness the web is serving in this way that has so much violence in front of us all the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of adult TV shows are quite graphic and violent as well. And yeah. It's as if Hollywood prides itself now on showing us somebody getting their throat slit, that we really need to see the knife penetrating the skin and we really need to see the blood come out right away. And it's like, I don't want to see that. Right. I need to look away. It's just, I don't know if I'm getting older or what's really happening to me, but I do not want to see fighting. I don't want to see, for anybody that listens to this podcast that has known me for a while, you will also be saying, what the heck happened to you? And not that that's a judgment, but it's just, I've just noticed a shift that I don't want to consume that. I'm not saying at all, but certainly not to the appetite that I once had, mm-hmm. The desire that I once had. But it's alarming to me with the numbers of kids that I see in my practice that all they want to do is get on the web and play these violent games. And that's going to shape, that's going to keep us locked into what are we learning, what are we teaching. How could you not want to do that when you're an adult? How could you not think in a really heated argument that some form of violence might be the answer, like you've practiced 100,000 times in your video games?
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't level up if you don't kill something.
Is that how it works?
Pretty much. Depending on the game. And I mean, even Michael likes to play Zelda, which is more kind of an adventure experience. It's all these different worlds you get to go play in, and you go on these quests. But in order to get through things at key junctures, you have to kill something. There's something that shows up that you have to somehow, some monster, something you have to get past, some person you have to get beyond. It's not like Warcraft or whatever the hell that is. I don't know if they still do the driving one. The car stealing.
Grand Theft Auto.
But all of them require, all of them require to, you know, to kill something before you can move on. Kill or be killed. That's the deal. Michael's forever getting frustrated because he gets killed a lot. trying to work around or kill whatever it is that's on the other, you know, that's on the screen. But it's a very serious conundrum, because, you know, this country in particular propagates that viewpoint in every aspect of society. Collaboration is a buzzword that's getting you that gets used in organizations to guilt people into working together instead of competing with each other. There are probably a few companies that actually come from a place of collaboration, and I'm thinking of potentially like Google, some of the bigger companies that have that kind of created an environment to generate that kind of energy. I mean, Apple does. It doesn't mean they're not competitive, but I think that industry seems to need collaboration to be successful, because you're collaborating between ideas and code and how do you make the idea become some form of reality, you know, takes a lot of people doing a lot of different things to make that happen. But so I guess the question is how do we, and maybe this comes to your question about, and maybe, I don't know if it's here to dive in or not, but the idea of that masculine and feminine, all that energy that's out of balance, and how do we find a way to shift to that more divine feminine energy? How do we find a way to move the needle from this kind of myopic, paternalistic, masculine, whatever it is, mess that we are currently in? Because the tendrils of it are just, it's getting harder and harder to kind of engage the world. Because it's gotten to the point where, you know, even on the basic level of Republican or Democrat is kill or be killed. You know, I mean, I don't mean that literally. I mean, it's probably more, it's more figurative that way, but the lack of understanding on either side of the fence, you know, I find myself stuck a numerous times kind of going, oh my gosh, there's such a vast chasm between these two ideas, and how do you create a bridge between the two? Because they're on different planets, you know, they're on completely different wavelengths. There's no, it's not like you're on either side of a chasm and you could kind of come up with some ideas to cross it. There's no connective tissue. So I said a lot of words there, kind of throwing ideas around to see where this, I have a desire to, for us to take this somewhere that we can, maybe provide some tools or offer some ideas or thoughts or concepts to help.
Yeah. You asked a good question a few moments ago about what could we do, what can be done to promote. And if we don't like the word collaboration because of its corporate connections, oneness, allness.
Yeah, no, collaboration is fine. And I wasn't meaning it to sound that way. I don't have an issue with the word. I'm saying that the word has been taken over.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, yeah. compassion would be the opposite of competition, or an opposite. You usually don't find compassionate combatants or compassionate competitors. Although we do have sportsmanship awards and things like that for, giving your soccer player that you knocked down a helping hand to get back up again. That's generally, those usually don't go together. But if I think the answer to your question, or perhaps an answer, or at least looking in that direction of what can we do to foster or promote more of a team, we're all here on the planet together idea, rather than this individualist, whether it's a make America great again and F everybody else, which is kind of what that says, at the national level, or whether we're taking it down to an individual level, it's got to start there. That as an individual, I could really say, what more do I need with regard to experiences or possessions or materialist sorts of things? Because there really is, until we have some kind of a particle accelerator, or we have some kind of an atomic redistributor, or some kind of a device that could take a rotten banana peel and construct it back into a healthy banana to be used again. We don't have that technology yet. At some point we may, but until then we have finite resources to use. And here in America, we're not taught to share. We're just, our programming is consume, consume, consume. And for the most part, are people really happy in that program? And my observation is the answer is no. Yeah. There aren't enough trips people can take. There aren't enough new cars you can have, or there isn't a house you buy at some point that you're completely satisfied with for the rest of your life. It's onward and upward. It's level up, like you said earlier. The endless quest for more stuff and more extravagant experiences. And I don't see that's satisfying. So if at some point we ask ourselves the question, what does satisfy? What does feel right? What does feel enough that we could get off the treadmill, and instead of being a country that's working more hours than any other country, we could be a country that's starting to meditate as much as other countries are, or we're having some kind of a commune with nature, or an experience where we have greater awareness that gets internalized to where we have a greater experience of just being happy and just being content with what we do have and with who we actually are right now. It's like, why do I have to wait 10 years before I can be satisfied with who I am based on my job title or the house I live in or any of that other stuff? What about right now? Be happy right now. Be content right now in this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. There are so many aspects of, I think you mentioned this earlier, but there are so much of our environment now is all predicated on the same premise. The idea of going to college and getting a degree and that was an aspiration for people that, back in the 70s and the 60s and the 70s, maybe even into the 80s, it was a goal. How can I better my situation, better the situation for my family, better the situation for all of us? Because if I'm the first one to get a degree in my family, that means I can help move my family into a different place. And flash forward to now, you know, the education system is messed up. You know, I mean, that in order for someone to now it's not even the idea of getting a degree. It is, if you don't have a degree, you're nobody. If you don't have a degree in, you know, in something, you can barely get a job. You know, unless it's a working at McDonald's or working at, you know, a fast food place. The criteria now is you're not good enough ever unless you have that. And even if you have it, chances are good you're not going to get a job in the area that you got your degree in. Even, you know, I was talking to somebody about it the other day, and I said, you know, it's extraordinary that it's supposedly an important part of the evolution of this culture. It's such a big deal, and yet the individual who's doing it gets saddled with multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt that they'll never get out of in order to have that. So you can't win from any direction. And that to me is very disconcerting. And I can't even imagine what it might feel like for young people now coming up through the system that they don't agree with. And it's obvious that they don't agree with it in my perspective. This sort of mass management of people through a system that's broken, that doesn't serve people and doesn't teach them things they need to know, and then requires them to continue to learn things and spend money to learn those things in order to find a job so they can pay back their loans for learning how to do that thing. Makes no sense to me at all.
Yeah.
And we keep trying to push the same shit, keep trying to put people through the same pipeline. I think a lot of kids in this new generation are struggling with that and those things on a much larger scale, because education is one of but many of the same type of approach to life that happens all throughout our society. And it's really challenging. I mean, it's challenging. You know, we talked a little bit about this before we started. We're talking about the mass conscious thing. You know, the American mass conscious, and mass conscious to me is something that exists planetarily, but also within the context of specific areas that you live in, the country that you live in, because it has a different sort of focus. But it makes it really challenging if your interest and if your desire is to become more of who you are, learn more about in the realm of consciousness and energy. And like you said from the beginning, why are we here? It makes it really challenging when everything you're trained into is not about that. It's not, none of it is that I see anymore has anything to do with taking people to the next level of their experience. It's the thing you do to make more money. It's the thing you do to make more money. It's the thing you do, to your point. It's the thing you do to buy the house, to buy the car, to have the kids. It's the thing you do to get you the stuff you want, which has absolutely nothing to do with connecting to self, has absolutely nothing to do with learning about who you are. And when you try to bring that energy into those environments, not happening. It's not accepted. It's not welcomed. It's not supported. And I'm not saying that's 100% of every environment on the planet. I'm saying that within the context of the mass conscious energy, that is a consistent thing in my experience. And that's really tough. But it's tough because if you make the decision to step into that, I want to know more about who this is and what my role is in the world at large and how I can create a positive impact, you have to disengage from all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Every aspect of it that you can, you know, is it that you can't get education? No, you can get education, but you have to be strategic about how you do it. You have to be very thoughtful about how valuable is this to me, or is this valuable to somebody else? You know, is this idea of higher education really about higher education, or is it just about let's spend more money because that's what I'm supposed to do? And that's, I say it's tough, but it's part of, I think, what we're called to at this point is There has to be a place where we stop and go, whoa, time out. We're not giving, you know, the kids that are coming up now don't even necessarily have, you know, it all looks like rebellion. It all looks like they're fighting everything. And I would too. I'm doing it on, you know, I'm doing it now at 54 years old. I'm like, I'm not fighting. Although from our earlier conversation, maybe I am a little bit. With the earlier conversation being having gotten kind of wrapped up in some of the political stuff and realized that,
excuse me,
bless you, on a personal level, really recognizing that you can't dabble. It doesn't work. You can't strive to increase your vibration, increase your energy, increase your understanding and connection to yourself and to the larger part of the universe or God or whatever you call it, and indulge in that base energy that we've been talking about, that competitive, I'm beginning to even lose words about it after the non-collaborative environment. It just becomes more and more difficult to, when you try to walk both, keeping a foot in both worlds, it's becoming more and more difficult and next to impossible.
So I was sharing with you before we started our podcast, one of the things that I've learned and I'm trying to apply to my life in the last couple months anyway, is this notion of I'm whole and I'm complete and I lack for nothing. And if that perhaps is a core life lesson that's in front of all of us, that after we have the degree, the house, the handful of lovers, the kids, the different experiences that we see in movies and TV and all that sort of thing that tells us if you have those things, you'll be happy. If we get to the point where we realize I'm no different than I was in the very beginning, even with all these experiences, I realize that I lack for nothing. I don't lack, my life isn't going to be any more complete or rich or more full. I'm not going to be of any more use or value to the universe or to God or mankind if I have a bigger house, a faster car, a younger spouse, an older spouse, a richer spouse, any of the different things that people are looking for as plus ups or level ups. Mm-hmm. Had it all the time, you know, kind of like the line that Dorothy had in The Wizard of Oz, you know, there's no place like home, and realizing as she wakes up from her dream that she had everything she was looking for all along.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps that's, we go through all of these experiences to learn that. And then if once we learn it, we realize, well, I don't have to be such a big consumer, and I can move more into collaboration, because I realize that perhaps what does help me feel better is helping others feel better in sharing, and just sharing. Sharing is a good place to be. And that's what we are doing in our podcast, is we're sharing. We're sharing what we've learned, what we've experienced, mm-hmm. what we think we know a little bit about. We could be completely wrong. And then part of that would be, well, if we're completely wrong, then don't do this. But either way, we're sharing. We're trying to give.
Yeah, and I think that is, you know, the height of collaboration. I think it isn't necessarily that we have to be engaged in some humanitarian effort to do something grand, and you can be, but I think it's cart before the horse. You know, a lot of times I think people go into those things thinking it's the right thing to do, and they learn a ton doing it, and that's a challenging way to learn about service and what. Sometimes if you're trying to use the event to get to the end result, instead of cultivating that energy and then taking that energy into the world, it's a whole different animal. But again, because we're all such unique and different and individuals, you know, the things that we've learned, the things that we can share here and hopefully reach some people who are looking for this information or who are wanting to connect to people who have a better understanding or feel like they have a connected understanding or, you know, whatever that is. You know, this is a great place for that because we're just trying to share life experience and hopefully it sticks for some and for others it may not. But I think because we come from very different perspectives in our history, that it's kind of cool too, because there's so many places we find collaboration in the things that we just talk about and the things that we understand, like even at the beginning, the use of the word learning and, you know, that there was no part of the conversation that had to be anything other than here's what your experience is, here's what my experience is. Now let's figure out what the language differences are and whether they matter.
Right.
And they don't in this case. And in most cases, they probably don't. It's just, I have a perspective and a language based on my life. You have a language and perspective based on yours. And now we got to find where they come together. That to me is probably some of the most profound things that two humans can do together, where there is absolutely no judgment about any of it. It's simply, this is how it feels. This is how I feel. This is the experience I'm having. I need to sort out, is this experience coming from some other place or is this a legitimate experience within the energy dynamic that we're having? You know, and it's great either way, because if it's in the dynamic we're having, it's easy to sort out. If it's outside of the dynamic we're having, it's my problem and we can bring it in to work on it or to talk about it, but it isn't. There's clarity there. So you're still not in a place where there's any burden to it or there's any competition in it. It's what we were saying before in relationship. It's that uplifting. We're taking it. Okay. How do we uplift this idea? How do we uplift this idea? You know, we're calling it diving in because we're going deep into these topics, but what we're trying to do is lift the energy so that it can be seen more clearly and can be explored by anybody. So now you have two more experiences of things being mine and yours and ours that we're sharing and people who are listening or participating now have even more of a perspective potentially.
Right.
To take their next step toward that idea of, like you're saying, of that more collaborative, more divine feminine energy that is about taking what we have, taking who we are, and being the fullness of that and contributing that to the whole. Did that stay on topic?
Well, it was a wide open topic, so yes.
Okay.
You could kind of come at this topic from a whole bunch of different angles, I think, so that one certainly applied.
True that. So what can we give the folks today to maybe, it seems like we come to the same place with many of our podcasts, which is taking the time to learn who this is.
Mm-hmm.
Including who this is including everything that happened from day one. You know, so it's an evolution. You're not going to have it all in one day. You're not going to have it all in a week. But you can make quantum jumps just by taking the time to get quiet and taking the time to find that energy in anything you do. There's, you know, every time you engage in any kind of project, any kind of work environment, any kind of relationship, you can actually consciously choose to be competitive or collaborative in the situation you're going into. And you can find that out by getting quiet and noticing the tenor of your thoughts about that thing. Noticing the direction they go in. Is it automatically about, I got to do this so this person will like me? I got to do this so my boss will think better of me? Or are you, I have these gifts that I can present for this particular event that I think will be valuable. How can they be used by everyone? And having that come in, you know. But again, that's a step. It's an extra step in the sense that it makes you stop, take that breath, take that moment. you know, hopefully it's more than just a moment if you can do it. You know, maybe it's 15 or 20 minutes. It's a little bit of time to really be in your own space so that you can see what your dynamic is doing within that, so you know what has to be or what can be changed or shifted or needs to be worked on in order to contribute. You know, you may discover all kinds of things that you can't do anything about in the moment, but you've discovered them. And because you've discovered them, now you can navigate around them, through them, around them, whatever. Or to your point earlier, it can be a powerful opportunity at communication, whether, again, it's in a work environment or relationship. It's an opportunity to say, hey, I notice this as I'm wanting to contribute here. I'm noticing this. Anybody else noticing this here? Is there some larger energy we could tend to, you know, here that would make this even more collaborative instead of this feeling of competitive or this feeling of somebody's got to be better? You know, we all have something to contribute. It just, you have to know what that is to some degree.
I like the idea of our podcasts helping us learn, like you said, who this is. And that is really the exploration that we're undertaking. And as we learn who this is, that we can love who this is, both the light and the shadow, we come with both, and that we could accept ourselves regardless of the labels we've taken on, the names we've been called, and the belief systems we've created that would make us anything less than 100% lovable and acceptable, whole and complete and lacking for nothing. That's just a beautiful place to live. And if you're not showing up that way, you may believe that you're whole and complete and lacking for nothing, but if you're not showing up that way, the universe will let you see. It will let you have experiences where you could see that your walk and your talk are not in alignment. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the learning.
And that, and as a tool, I will say that the way that you are able to determine that is the tenor of your emotion in the context of whatever it is you're doing. If your thought process and your emotions are in any way negative or not uplifting, you're in the wrong place. And I say wrong place, meaning that may not be the best choice of words, but in the context of whatever it is you're doing, you're not bringing the best you to that situation. And so the outcome cannot be what you anticipate it to be, because you're not bringing all of you to that situation. And so being able to, again, being able to sit in your feeling and being able to understand what it is, it takes time. It's a language that you have to learn over time, because you're now dialing into this whole apparatus that has had however many years of inattention it had until you decided to give it attention. So all of the nerves, all of the cells, all of the blood, everything energetically is geared to a different place than where you want to be in the moment. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, because having the awareness to create that change is amazing and wonderful and powerful, but that begins a journey that's a completely different path and a completely different set of parameters than where you were before. And so it's important that taking that time to understand a little better, to find your language, to find your understanding of what is that feeling and what is it about? What, you know, a lot of times we automatically go to the broadest spectrum. You know, oh, I'm pissed off. Well, okay. Pissed off is okay. But what's happening under pissed off is just the projection you're putting out to protect from all the other stuff you're feeling below pissed off.
Right.
there could be multiple levels there. So it's about taking the time to stop and go, oh, I notice I'm pissed off. Okay. Now I'm going to observe being pissed off so I can begin to understand what's driving pissed off. So if I observe it, it's going to do what it's doing. And as it's doing what it's doing, all of a sudden I'm going to have another thing happen. And that little thing may be, wait, why do I feel hurt all of a sudden? What am I hurt about? Did I get hurt somewhere? What happened? And then you go, oh, okay.
why am I feeling, and then hurt sort of becomes, and then you're overwhelmed by the hurt experience going, holy crap, this is really bugging me. What happened? And you may not know right away, again, because it's not all linear. That hurt feeling may have come from a conversation you had with your spouse at breakfast over coffee. And now you're at work and you're feeling hurt, but you're feeling hurt by a situation that isn't occurring in front of you. And now you're pissed off because you're tired of feeling hurt, and now you're frustrated and confused. So now you're pissed off trying to blow this energy that you don't understand. And I'm painting the picture because it literally goes together that way. The brain does not do this in any form of logic. The subconscious does not operate that way. It operates in symbols and experience. It does not operate in a linear fashion. So the way we connect dots, while to the conscious mind may seem, oh, well, I'm pissed off because of this, not when you stop and sit and be with that for a moment, because sure, that's just the surface trigger. That's what's blowing the energy off the top. So do you want to jump in there anywhere? And
well, yeah, I would also add that even if you figure out I'm pissed off because of this, you got yourself there.
Exactly.
You created all of this to have that experience so that you could actually go underneath it all and then explore it and then laugh and go, oh, really? Wow. Huh? I'm playing the victim again. Or, you know, I think life should be fair. Or there's some kind of core belief system that's out of play, or that everybody should be nice to me, or there should never be a dog that bites me. You know, all these kind of different things that are just laughable when they show up.
And that brings up a really good point, which is to recognize the blame game. Jeff's point was not at all about directing the blame itself. It's about self-responsibility. It's about acknowledging what you observe of the process. It's not about blame. It's not about blaming anybody, because why do you want to be a victim of yourself any more than you want to be a victim of somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point. It's empowerment, it's evolution, it's growth, it's expansion. All of those occur when we're able to acknowledge and take responsibility for what is ours. And once you do that a couple times, if you're not comfortable with it, what you'll find is that it becomes liberating as all get out. Because as soon as you recognize, oh, okay, what's going on here? Okay, I'm pissed off. Okay, what events transpired here? How did I engage in this? How did I engage in this? Not how did they engage me in this? How did I engage in this? And over time, and it doesn't necessarily take a long time, it's because that belief that we deserve to be punished or hurt or blamed is just more of the same mass conscious garbage that's just not pertinent, really. When it comes down to it, it's completely not relevant. It's just a way to deflect. It's a way to not go there.
Mm-hmm.
So find that, you know, if you find that blame thing going on, that's why I was sharing with the story about my experience of dabbling in the politics a little bit, recognizing that all of a sudden I thought I was seeing myself as a victim. And I went, what? Wait, whoa, time out. If I put that meme out on Facebook, I am firmly ascribing that I am a victim to that thing.
Right.
And I've just, not only have I said it in words, I put a frickin' picture out for the whole world to see. Look at me, I'm a victim. No, 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 no. So what I did about it was I took responsibility for it and I took it down, because that's not what I want my energy to represent. That's not who my energy, that's not who I am.
Right.
Not my energy. Is it a part of me? Sure. Part of me loves to get pissed off about stupid shit. Who doesn't? We're human. We like to find ways to be annoyed about things sometimes. But in the end, if it's something that's it's causing disturbance in my force, it's causing the disturbance in my field. The disturbance is because I put it there, not because we're paying taxes. I put it there. You know, and putting it there put me at a place of then opening my energy to all of the things at that level of vibration. I don't want that. I'm not opening a door to a vibration that I've worked many years to not participate in anymore.
Right.
You know? So that's the encouragement. And the encouragement is, is see it as empowerment. See it as I am. It's not, it doesn't serve you. You are attempting to bring out the best possible version of yourself. And if you were going to get dressed up to go to a fancy ball and, you know, you had to wear a full on tux and a big dressy thing, would you put a dirty shirt on? Would you wear a clean tux and put a dirty shirt on? Why? So that you could feel not really dressed. You know, you're going to this big event and you want to feel fabulous and you want to look great and you want to feel like you look great and you have a dirty shirt on. That's sort of like what putting the meme out on Facebook is like. You just put a dirty shirt on and tell everybody, look at me, I'm wearing a dirty shirt.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's, so again, it's, it, then you have to make the choices. And sometimes those choices aren't always easy either. You know, when you get there and go, oh God, all these people responded and it created this engagement. And I go, I don't care. I contributed to something that I don't feel good about. I have to remove that energy now.
And then we get better and better at that.
Yep. But you got to do, you know, left foot, right foot. I always say left foot, right foot. That's how you get from point A to point B, left foot, right foot. Can't get there. Can't wish yourself there. You got to place your right foot and then place your left foot and walk and keep walking, keep walking. So it's never a dull moment in my world. There's so many exciting things to see and do and understand and learn and experience. And, you know, that's my want for everyone, to have that level of enthusiasm and excitement for all of their world.
Well, where do you think we wound up in our adventure today, Jim, since we didn't really know where we were going?
So where did we end up in our adventure today? We talked a lot about at the beginning of the podcast, just sort of dissecting the challenges of beliefs and cultural ideas and things that have an impact on how we perceive our reality and how we perceive ourselves in that reality. And I'm using a little different verbiage than what we started with, and you can chime in, Jeff, and add to or take away from whatever. But this conversation to me has been a huge arc of kind of illuminating a lot of aspects of our experience that may not be to our benefit or to our favor, but that by making choices to understand self more completely and to engage in that fashion, we then can disengage from the things that don't serve and disengage from those consciousnesses and ideas that don't promote our personal or our first, our personal evolution, but secondarily is that collaborative effort of whether it's our family or our made up family or our culture or our world. It's got to start with the individual who's desiring to step into that collaborative idea and that collaborative environment. And in order to do that, you have to say no to the competitive one.
Right.
Because none of it really needs to be a competition. You know, there's another sort of idea that, you know, we've been on the planet as human beings for a very long time. And the idea that there are limited resources has probably been in the lexicon of every generational experience forever. If we think in those terms, we're automatically in a competitive mode.
Mm-hmm.
If we decide that there is enough for everyone because everyone has the right, well, maybe not even, I don't know if the right's the right word, but has the capacity to create whatever they want and to have whatever they want. And if it's somebody else that you think is keeping you from it, you're now a victim. So you're not a creator, you're a victim. So again, all of these choices, the core one being that if I'm going to engage in my life in relationship or work or wherever it is, the person on the street, am I approaching this from a competitive nature or from a collaborative nature?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, that's kind of been the thread of this whole conversation. Has been sort of focused around this idea of am I a competitive consciousness or a collaborative consciousness? And I think that's a really wonderful place, a very neutral really place for every individual to stop to ask themselves that question, because you can't really judge it. You can just observe it and say, I'm a little on the competitive side today.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't become, it's not a bad word. It's not, you know, it's not a dirty word. It's just, oh, okay, I'm operating from left brain. I'm not operating from right brain.
Sure.
I'm operating from ego in the left brain, and I'm not operating from my spirit or soul in the left brain, or whatever, if I got it backwards, in the right brain. You know what I mean? Got it all tangled up. But so all of those questions, it's ask the question. Ask the question of self, and then be willing to hear the answer, and then be willing to walk that to the next, wherever the next place is. That's sort of my Reader's Digest condensed version of our today's conversation. What do you think?
I love it. I love it. It's all good stuff, man. Good summary.
Right on. So have we come to that place in our podcast?
I believe we have. We are there.
Lovely plateau where we took the jet off and we just landed back on the aircraft carrier, and it was a seamless, seamless dude. Awesome. Well, thank you all out there who are listening, who are participating with us. We appreciate you very much. Come see us on our website, www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. Got a great website with all kinds of, you know, we've got blogs going on, and all of our information is there, but you can also catch us on your favorite podcast support, whether it's Deezer or Spotify or iTunes or I know there's a couple other Podcast Addict, and I know there's another one that I'm not remembering at this minute, but lots of places to find us. Adventures in Truth Podcast. Important that you put the podcast on the end, because that's how you'll find us. Adventures in Truth Podcast. So thanks for joining us. Great having another conversation with you today, Dr. Jeff. Always good to hang out with you.
You too, Jim. Appreciate you a lot.
And IU. Looking forward to our next adventure. And thanks for diving in with us, guys. Have a great afternoon, evening, or morning, wherever you are.
All right. So long, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We also offer video versions of our podcast. Visit our page on YouTube at Adventures in Truth Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Like, connect, and follow with us on Facebook. Want to book us for your next podcast or to speak at your event? Head over to our webpage at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com at the bottom of the page and send us a note. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you again at Adventures in Truth Podcast.